Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate that you listen to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and also leave us some feedback. Rate us. Give us a review. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoy.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Portland Diamond Project Day, that is tomorrow. It's the first annual Portland Diamond Project Day. You can visit the Portland Diamond Clubhouse. It's at 1919 Southwest Morrison Street in Portland, right across from Providence Park. I'll be out there with a live broadcast noon to 3 p.m. from the clubhouse. We'll have interviews with Craig Cheek and Mike Barrett, Darwin Barney, much more. Breakside Brewery will be on site giving out free samples of their new beer. Darwin Barney will be signing the Bring Major League Baseball to Portland posters that they'll be giving out. Also, you can get 20% off all the merchandise in the store. T-shirts, hoodies, and hats, Portland gear stuff, the finest stuff. But if you want to celebrate, come by tomorrow, Portland Diamond Project Day. I know KGW is going to send Orlando Sanchez out there to check out the scene, and he joins us here now on this radio show. Orlando, are you going to stop by tomorrow?
Yeah, man. I've already got dibs on one of those hoodies they're selling.
There you go. Come on by. Hey, did you watch that game last night? What'd you think?
You know what? I had expectations set pretty darn low and was pleasantly surprised as the thing unraveled. Not only did we get the defense that everybody thought we'd get, we actually got some buckets and excitement. And, you know, everyone was prisoners of the moment and calling it one of the greatest games of all time. And no, it turned out to be pretty cool. So, yeah, I tuned in for it. Had to at this point.
What made it great for you? Because I think that answer is probably different for other people.
The fact that we got a competitive finish. We saw multiple lead changes. We saw it, you know, it tied. So anytime you have a good finish, that's all I really look for to keep me locked in. Does this have the potential to have an exciting finish that I'm going to remember tomorrow? And we got extra basketball. We got, you know, an overtime period out of it. So I'm good with it, man.
Yeah, and I think there's so much competition for our eyeballs right now, even in viewing regular television, that if you can just give us a sporting event that has a compelling, interesting ending, that's all we're really asking for. What was it like for you to be on the road with the Oregon Ducks men's program and women's program in the tournament?
John, that was a lot of fun, man. I give you a lot of credit because you do a ton of flying that I don't think people realize. You know, you're in and out of cities so quickly, and just from the veteran experience that is trying to navigate through cities and get back in time for deadlines and shows and whatnot, that is a challenge. And I found out kind of firsthand with this Tampa trip where, you know, the men, I ended up somehow in Cincinnati for a night.
Yep.
For the women, I somehow ended up spending the night in Denver. So it was a trip to me, but just covering it as a whole, like they don't take it for granted. I'm super grateful. It was awesome covering both teams. The men's team was such a fun ride because I don't think anybody expected it. I had them done against after that UCLA game in the regular season. And so everything for me was just icing on the cake for the men's club. And every time you thought, okay, they were done, they did something else that made you think, well, you know what? This ride isn't over yet. Maybe it can go on even longer. And I was kind of eating my words. Like, as soon as I said it, I did a separate interview with NBC on just the Ducks ride. And, you know, they were saying, oh, what are the chances that the Oregon men can actually – do they have a legitimate shot at winning this game? And I'm like, well, you know what? No one thought that UMBC had a legitimate shot at beating Virginia, you know, the first 16 seed to beat a one seed. And as soon as I said that, I said, they're going to win the whole darn thing, man. I totally messed that up. And so sure enough the Ducks, that was a great game, minus the final 5 minutes of that game where they just went cold and couldn't do anything. That was really fun. And the women, I think, was the one surefire thing we in the TV side of things at KGW had kind of planned on. We were like, let's kind of circle that date as we'll be in Tampa, we'll be covering this team, and maybe they make a run at a national championship. But the women was a lot of fun, and getting a chance to talk to Sabrina on a more regular basis, you know, for media day and in the locker rooms and stuff. Got a chance to see how she ticks and stuff. So I thought that was really cool. Overall, man, that was quite the ride.
More enjoyable to interview the women or men athletes on that level?
That's tough. I feel like the women are a little more candid across the board.
Of course they are. They're like, so much better. You're being nice to the men. The women are head and shoulders better. They're more refreshing. Yeah. They're candid. They'll be honest.
Yeah.
The guys, you got to be like, can you take your earbuds out so I can interview you?
I will say that Kenny Wooten and Peyton Pritchard were really good. But yeah, you're right. you are totally spot on. And even, you know, what was really cool was we set up our workstation right behind the pressers for the women's media days. And the coaches were just so more open about stuff. Like, they were willing to go off the beaten path and show their personality and get upset or get excited. Where not all men's coaches, you hear that it's more even keeled, and I don't know the response.
Why is that, you think? Why do you think that is?
You know, I don't really know. It's like, I guess maybe the women's side, they don't feel like they have much to lose, or they're willing to put themselves out there a little more to get a little more attention. We had a conversation with a few other media members out there too about this, because that was what was interesting to me, like hearing Gino Auriemma or whether it was Mulkey or. You know, like, each one had their own side, and they weren't scared to go at each other or take jabs at something that was happening. And you don't get that with the men's team all the time.
Mulkey is so interesting to me. That's the coach I'd like to sit down with and have, like, a Mike Leach-like interview.
Oh, and I think she would totally go there. You know, your walks where Mike Leach is walking around running into people at stop signs and while he's doing an interview. Like, I think Mulkey would totally give you that, man.
Orlando Sanchez is our guest, sports anchor and reporter at KGW-TV in Portland, the NBC affiliate. You can also catch him on Sports Sunday and KGW on Sunday nights. The unfinished business thing, Sabrina Ionescu said there's unfinished business. I kind of think the men's program has unfinished business too. But how are those things different in your mind when you look at next season for Oregon basketball?
Well, for the women and unfinished business, as soon as the game was over, I was talking to Sabrina just about the future and how this could fuel them moving forward, getting a taste of the Final Four and knowing that they were that close to taking down a juggernaut and the eventual national champion. And I didn't get the vibe that she was leaving the whole time. She was kind of phrasing it like, we need to, you know, next time, those type of things. And I'm like, this does not feel like a player who has checked out, who has thought, you know what, I'm going pro, this is it for me. And to a lot of the stories that you've written, John, on just the amount of money, the difference in decision where Zion, it's a no-brainer. He's got to go. You're number one. You strike while the iron's hot for some of these players, where Sabrina has the luxury of stepping back and saying, you know what, maybe it is more important that I try and reach this ultimate goal, or, you know what, I do play for a Nike school, and maybe I can be the face of this sport. And then you flip the script with the men's team, and you get a guy like maybe Kenny Wooten, who surprises a lot of people and becomes a human highlight reel where everyone is talking about, because he has some crazy dunks or blocks that send shots into the third row. You get that vibe that he's like, you know what, I need to test the waters right now. I need to see if I'm pro. And the other thing that blew my mind also was with Peyton Pritchard, where I was like, you know what, he's another hot game away from us saying this dude might need to leave. Like, he might need to go pro, because his stock is so high at this point. So from just like a future looking ahead perspective, from an individual standpoint within players, I thought it was really an interesting dynamic to go from covering the men's team in the tournament setting one week to the women's scene the next weekend. The dynamic is just totally different, John, and you know this firsthand, but that was fun to just really see between the lines in which the challenges are so different in keeping those rosters together and intact, because this women's team loses two players, the men's team loses two players, but it has a totally different vibe where you're thinking, this women's team now with Sabrina coming back, they're loaded. They're ready to go again, like pencil them in for the Final Four, barring some type of injury, where the men's game, it's a total wait and see who's actually going to declare, who's going to test the waters, all of that stuff. You really don't exactly know what's going to happen with the men.
All right, Orlando Sanchez, you're the best. I appreciate you. Check him out on KGW. Thanks, O.
You're the man.
All right, there he is. Leave it here. We go to Salt Lake City next. Blazers Jazz?
John Canzano. Raw. Sourced. Fresh. From the
the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, built by High Caliber Millwrights. This is the bald-faced truth.
Appreciate everybody who makes this radio show part of their day. Say that with all sincerity. Whether you're listening on podcast, which you can get on Stitcher, iTunes, Apple Podcasts, wherever you listen to podcasts, you can get this show. Or whether you are as you drive around in the course of your day, I know you're busy. I know you have options. I know you have choices. I appreciate that you make a commitment every day to tune into this radio show. You're an absolute army. And I know that a lot of you, I run into a lot of people who are like, hey, I'm always humbled when I hear that from people who are tuned into the show. So thank you for being out there and being part of this radio show. Our next guest covers the Utah Jazz for the Salt Lake Tribune, also hosts a radio show on ESPN 700 in Salt Lake City. Andy Larson joining us. Andy Larson, where are you today?
I am in Salt Lake City, just got back home from Jazz practice and getting ready for Jazz Nuggets tonight.
Jazz Nuggets, everybody playing tonight, or what's going to happen?
Yeah, well, you know, everyone who's healthy is playing. You know, obviously, the Nuggets have just one injury to Michael Porter Jr., and then the Jazz have a few kind of nagging injuries that they've had for the last week. Derek Favors is probable with back spasms, but Kyle Korver, Ricky Rubio, and Howell Neto are all out, so the Jazz will be playing without a point guard tonight, but that's something that they've faced pretty frequently over the last second half of the season, and so something that they're kind of used to at this point.
It's really interesting because last year during the playoffs, watching Donovan Mitchell and watching the Jazz, I felt like Utah had really captured some energy and some momentum. I'm excited to see them in a series with the Blazers. Given the Blazers' current state with injuries and no Jusuf Nurkić, how do you see a potential Jazz-Blazers series going?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I think from a Jazz point of view, and maybe this isn't fair to Portland Trailblazers, but maybe Portland is their preferred opponent at this point between them and the Rockets, and, you know, Denver is still possible, too, because of those injury woes that you mentioned, and I think the difference between having Nurkić and not having Nurkić is obviously a big one for the Blazers. But I think the Jazz kind of feel like they could confidently attack Enes Kanter and the Blazers centers in pick and roll, and obviously, you know, the guards, while they're extremely explosive offensively, defensively can be are a little bit of a weakness and maybe be exploited a little bit. And so I think the Jazz think that the offense would be just fine. It's just kind of whether or not they have the personnel to match up with Dame and CJ on the defensive end, which I think is a concern. You know, if Ricky Rubio is coming in with some sort of injury, whether that be his hamstring or the knee, and then, of course, Dante Exum is out for the season, that which is a long, lanky guard who can defend Damian Lillard and CJ maybe better than anyone else on the team could. That could be a struggle until they'll need to, you know, dedicate a lot of defensive resources to stopping those guys. Not that that's anything new from what probably Portland fans have seen.
It's interesting, last year's playoff series, what did the Jazz get out of that?
Yeah, you know, I think a lot. You know, obviously you saw kind of Donovan Mitchell grow from a rookie kind of inefficient scorer and a guy who was just kind of trying to figure things out to getting a chance to play against a really good defensive opponent in the Oklahoma City Thunder and even then the Houston Rockets after that, and kind of realized, oh, wow, I can even score against the best of the best. You know, even if Paul George is defending me, there are still some things I can do on the offensive end that are dangerous and helpful for my team. And, you know, then I think this is something that Quinn Snyder really excels at, too, is his ability to game plan in the course of a playoff series, and his ability to make adjustments, the ability to kind of attack opponents where they're weakest and really take advantage of his own team's strengths. And so I think the Jazz kind of found that and kind of used it to kind of surprise, I think, a lot of people with that Oklahoma City first-round upset. And then, you know, obviously the Houston Rockets were the better team last year. And I think, you know, that would be whatever the Jazz face, if they do get into the second round, that would still be kind of a where they're probably expected to lose.
I didn't think Portland would win a playoff series even with a healthy Jusuf Nurkić, but now with him out, I'm looking at it going, how do they figure this out? Is the home court a big factor in this series, or do you think it's a bigger factor? Just how does Portland respond to not having Nurk?
I don't think it's a big factor. And you look at the history of the fourth-fifth matchup over the last decade or so, and it really has been, I think it's six of the last seven was the stat that I saw, have been won by the fifth seed rather than the fourth seed. And you look at the last 2 years where the Jazz have been that number five seed, upsetting the Oklahoma City Thunder last year and even the L.A. Clippers before that, the Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, DeAndre Jordan Clippers. So I don't think home court is a big deal for the series. You know, I think these are two really good home crowds. I really enjoy coming up to Portland and watching what Blazers fans do. But, you know, I think Jazz fans are good as well. But I don't think that, you know, both of these teams have shown an ability to win on the road and in the playoffs. You know, I think the Jazz have shown they've actually won more games on the road in the playoffs than at home over the last couple of years in the Quinn Snyder era. So I just don't think it's that big of a factor.
I'm looking at Donovan Mitchell's season stats this year versus last. He's up in points. He's rebounding at a better level. He's got more assists. Is he a better player than he was a year ago?
He is. It's not by a lot. You know, I don't think that there's this leap that he took. I think he took more shots. He took a bigger role in the offense. And this year, it was from the very beginning of the year, day one, that the Jazz knew that they had their scoring star, which I think it took until really December of last year to kind of realize what they had in Donovan Mitchell. He has absolutely extended his game. You know, I think he's got some more finishes in the middle of the paint. I think he's a better shooter than he was last year. Like you said, I think he's starting to figure out how to deal with how different defenses attack him. You know, I think for example, earlier on in the second in his second year, he really struggled with teams blitzing him in the pick and roll, and now he's kind of realized, okay, what I need to do against that is X, Y, and Z. You know, I need to find the open man. I know where it's going to be, and then I can cut off of that and maybe even get a basket myself still. And I think those are the kind of things that you like to see a second player kind of figure out, and we are seeing Donovan Mitchell do that.
We're talking to Andy Larson, Salt Lake Tribune, about a potential Blazers-Jazz playoff series. If Ricky Rubio's injury is a factor, who else in that rotation picks up the slack?
Yeah, I mean, Howell Meadow is the backup point guard, but he's also facing his own injury issues with ankle soreness right now, and he's been kind of been a guy that's been in and out of out of the roster. So, you know, I don't know what his status will be for the playoffs. Like I said, the Jazz have spent a lot of time with no point guard at all, with Dante Exum, Howell Neto, and Ricky Rubio. What they do then is have Donovan Mitchell run the point guards from the beginning of the game. And then it's really Joe Ingles, when Donovan comes out, that takes over those point guard duties. And he really has developed the playmaking part of his game to be a danger in the pick and roll, especially with Derek Favors in that combination. So that's what the Jazz do when he's out. I think the Jazz really benefit from having Ricky Rubio on the floor, even though he's not a good shooter at all. You know, I think he does have kind of this offensive know-how of how to make the Jazz get into their sets, find open guys, and make stuff happen. And the offensive rating numbers show that as well.
Andy Larson, Salt Lake Tribune, covers the Utah Jazz. All right, let's say Portland does the unthinkable. Like, no, I don't think anybody thought when Nurkic went down that this was a team that could win a series, a meaningful playoff series. But let's say Portland does beat the Jazz. What does that do to sort of the trajectory of this era of Jazz basketball?
Yeah, I don't know that it changes it that much, because you just do have, you've got Donovan Mitchell under contract for two more years under his rookie deal, and then, you know, presumably signs the whatever restricted free agent, whether that be an extension or the Jazz match. You know, the Jazz would have him for another 4 years after that, likely. So that's good. And then you've got Rudy Gobert still for another 2 years. So it's not like the Jazz have a lot of free agents that are coming up this season. Ricky Rubio will be a free agent. Derek Favors will be. They have the option of moving on from him, and they can do that. I think they kind of may make the decision, it's the same decision either way, whether they win or lose in a first-round series. But it's not this, like, franchise-changing pivotal moment for the Jazz, I think. If the Jazz lose this series, it's just kind of it may hurt maybe a case they might make to a free agent, like a, you know, we've been talking about Tobias Harris or a Kemba Walker or a Chris Middleton around here, and maybe you have a better case if you get it to the second round of the playoffs than the first. But I don't think it's a, you know, a huge catastrophic thing if you lose in the first round to the Blazers.
Is it a weird place for Utah to be where they're looking at Portland, they're looking at Denver, they're looking at the standings, and they feel like a lot of this was out of their control?
Yeah, oh, for sure. And it's funny, you know, you look at this game and you can honestly say, hey, there's a case that Jazz should maybe try to lose this game and instead give themselves a chance to fall to the sixth seed just in case Denver's, you know, devious plan of tanking and getting the Rockets to the fourth seed plays out the way it does. You know, if the Rockets lose tonight to the Thunder, that all of a sudden looks like a real possibility if, you know, the Blazers win their last two games. So I think it is a weird situation to be in, you know, where your opponent is out of your control. These last two games are not a big deal. But the truth of the matter is that this team has this very defined culture of, hey, we're going to try every game. We're going to try to get better every game, and we're going to improve kind of marginally each and every day. And hopefully, you know, you're at the point where it's no longer you're a good team and you're kind of relying on other things to go well around you. It's by next season you're an elite team and you're at the top of the conference and you're kind of making those decisions for other people. So that's the hope. This is still a young team, but yeah, it is definitely a weird situation where, you know, for the most part, this is out of Jazz's hands a little bit at this point.
It rocked the Portland market when Yusuf Nurkic went down, and I think that injury, there was a lot of response around the NBA. Do the Jazz now go, hey, Yusuf, sorry, but do they come into this series salivating a little bit? Or who on the roster has the biggest opportunity with Enes Kanter being the big threat inside for the Blazers?
Yeah, you know, I think it's the Jazz know Enes Kanter well, right? I mean, the Jazz had him for four seasons, traded him away because of the defensive liabilities that he presented, and really Rudy Gobert was the guy who didn't play behind Enes Kanter until really the last couple of months of that fourth year. And so I think Rudy Gobert is going to be excited about that matchup. And I think you look at some of the other guards on the team, and, you know, I think they're excited to kind of exploit Enes Kanter in the pick and roll, even though Kanter's gotten better at that. I still certainly don't think it's a strength. And then, you know, Rodney Hood is another guy, too, was on the Jazz as recently as last season. And I think he's a guy that the Jazz know really well, and they know his strengths, but again, they also know his weaknesses, and they know that he can fall asleep sometimes on weak side defense, and they know that he's maybe not the strongest on-ball defender. And, you know, there are some things that I think the Jazz are not excited about, you know, making Rodney Hood and Enes Kanter look bad, but I think there are some guys that know how they can win those matchups in the course of this series. So I think that's something that the Jazz would be, yeah, excited about. I think that's one reason why they'd be optimistic about their chances against the Blazers. But, I think there's a lot there for the Jazz to maybe find some success. And like you say, Nurk's injury is such a big one.
Andy Larson, Salt Lake Tribune, covers the Jazz, hosts a radio program in Salt Lake as well on ESPN 700. Andy, the fans in Salt Lake have been given a rap as, you know, they're abusive towards some of the players. People say, oh, they hate playing there. The fans are racist, all this. Is the Salt Lake fan get a bad rap, or is there truth in that?
Look, you know, I think it's both. You know, I think they do get a bad rap, and obviously, you know, there's not a majority of racist fans or anything like that. It's pretty clear that it's been, you know, one or two or, heck, let's say up to five people. I don't know how many people it is that have been saying these things in the front row within the earshot of players. The Jazz took steps to ban two fans when the Russell Westbrook thing happened. And, you know, I think that was a good step. And I think it was good for Gail Millett to say, hey, we will not tolerate this. And if you hear any of this from your fellow fan, make sure you speak up and, you know, either get him to stop or send a text message to the arena security hotline. And then there are kind of these very clear protocols in place for what people should do in those kind of instances. But yeah, obviously it's not every fan, and it's not, I think the vast majority of Jazz fans are like really good, passionate people who really want to see their team win and are doing it in the right way. But nevertheless, I don't think that doesn't mean that the conversation can't be productive. And I thought Kyle Korver's piece yesterday on the Players Tribune was a really good example of that. It's like, hey, you know, sure, I think, you know, 95%, like I say, of fans are doing the right thing and are not problematic in any way, but that doesn't mean that we can't benefit from that conversation.
The playoffs as they stand now, you'd have Golden State against the Clippers, Denver against the Spurs, Nuggets, Thunder, and then Nuggets Thunder. Wait, no, you'd have Nuggets Spurs. You'd have Rockets Thunder, Blazers Jazz. Which of those series is the most interesting?
I think it's Rockets Thunder, just because obviously there's a lot of star power there. But I think we haven't seen the best from the Oklahoma City Thunder over the last couple of weeks. And you know, if Paul George can kind of regain that form that he had earlier on in the season before the shoulder injury, then all of a sudden that seems like a really close matchup that honestly the Thunder could come out with a win. So to me, I think they have a lot of weapons to maybe work on defending James Harden with. Obviously, the Rockets are much better shooters than the Thunder, and that's a key advantage they have. And certainly, you favor the Rockets in that series at this point. But if the Thunder play like they can, then that's a really tough, interesting series that I think could go the distance.
All right, Andy Larson, I will see you on Press Row at this playoff series. I look forward to seeing a little bit of Salt Lake, getting to know the fans a little bit, and appreciate your time, man.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm praying over here to come up to Portland rather than go down to Houston. If everything goes right and you guys win your last two games, if you guys could just lose one of those last two games for me, that would be great, because I love the city of Portland and love visiting whenever I can.
All right.
Pass that on for me.
Please. All right. We'll pass that on, see if we can do something about that. I think it's going to be Blazers Jazz, but don't you think so, Peter? I mean, isn't that how, like...
Yeah, I don't expect Houston to lose to Oklahoma City tonight. They're motivated, and yeah, it's going to be Blazers Jazz. It is.
Yeah, because Houston's, I mean, I would worry if Houston were sitting in a let's rest some players position, but they are motivated by, they got a shot to move up to two, which would be they don't have to leave the state of Texas. They get to play the Spurs. That's a better matchup for them. And they're also motivated by the fact that the Blazers are a game and a half behind them for three. They got to win.
Yeah.
To kind of put it away.
Yeah, and they're going to. I expect them to.
Guess who's on tomorrow's show? Because tomorrow we're doing the baseball celebration with the Portland Diamond Project. But I have an NBA guest booked for tomorrow that I'm really excited about as well. Jamal Crawford
of the
Phoenix Suns is going to come on. All bets are off because season ends tonight. Tomorrow, he's coming on with us to give his playoff predictions.
That'll be fun.
He's going to tell us who he's picking and why in each series. So we'll get it from Jay Crossover, Jamal Crawford, on tomorrow's show. Make sure you're here for that. All right. Coming up, our 2 at 2. It's the two biggest things in sports. I think we've got some news breaking in the sports world. You want to stay tuned to the station for that as well. And as I pointed out, if you missed any of that interview, grab a podcast at SoundCloud, iTunes. Mike Leach just texted me. He wants to come on the show. I love that. We don't even have to reach out to people. They're all clamoring to get on this show. Who do you want to see on this show? Tweet at me, at John Canzano BFT. Give us someone to chase because we got people knocking on the door. I feel like we have the velvet ropes. We got a couple of bouncers outside, and Mike Leach is standing in line. He's going, "Hey, can I get in? You think I could get in there? Hang out inside that radio show?" Mike Leach, we'll get him on at some point. Not today. Probably not tomorrow, but at some point. Leave it here. You got the bald-faced truth. 2 at 2.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the bald-faced truth.
Sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald-Faced Truth radio show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald-Faced Truth radio show. Thanks for listening.